to buy into what you're doing. And what he did was that whole approach he had just created more conflict, and they lost a lot of time. But I think what's also important to keep in mind is that he has flipped on things like Common Core. He was for it, then he saw something stirring, and he flipped on that. So he put his finger up in the wind on that.
Well, Bob Henley, thanks so much for being with us, political analyst, investigative reporter for WBGO. This is Democracy Now! That does it for our broadcast. If you'd like to get a copy, go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltzer, and Matej Nareen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, and Amy Littlefield, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, our engineers. I'll be speaking in Chicago on Thursday night, and on Friday, our special here, James Earl Jones, read Frederick Douglass's July 4th speech. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Special thanks to Julie Crosby.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with our guest hosts Mike Crenshaw and Monica Beamer. They'll bring us reports from the third U.S. Social Forum in Philadelphia and San Jose.
Tune in to KBOO for the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, July 2nd through July 5th. From noon to 10 p.m., we'll be broadcasting live from the festival. Oregon community media stations in Ashland, Astoria, Bend, Cottage Grove, Newport, Salem, and Warm Springs will also be carrying the festival, as well as KBOO in Portland, Hood River, and Corvallis. So tune in July 2nd through the 5th, noon to 10 p.m., for the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival on Oregon Community Media and your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present The Harder They Come as part of the KBOO at the Clinton monthly film series. The Harder They Come is a 1972 Jamaican crime film. With dreams of becoming a successful reggae singer, a young Jamaican man, played by Jimmy Cliff, finds corruption from his record producers and the drug pushers they're connected to. Again, that's The Harder They Come, Thursday, July the 9th at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, and accessories with a focus on natural fibers since 1984. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at gazellenaturalfiberclothing.com.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You're listening to Wednesday Morning Talk Radio, and we are your guest hosts today. This is Mike Crenshaw, station co-manager. I'm here with my colleague, Monica Beamer.
Good morning, everyone.
And we're happy to come in and talk to you today, give you basically a report back from the U.S. Social Forum that we both attended. It was a polycentric social forum this year. There were social forum sites in Tijuana, Mexico, Jackson, Mississippi, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania and San Jose, California. So I was down there in San Jose from June 24th to the 28th, and Monica was in Philadelphia. And we've got some guests, some key leaders, some people who are integral to the process of the U.S. Social Forum here. We're going to be talking to them, Rose Brewer, Edgar Franks, Shimako Noble, and I'm sorry, Monica, Rob
Robinson.
Indeed. So we want to encourage you to call in if you have questions at 503-231-8187. And if you don't know what the U.S. Social Forum is, it's a coming together of people. It's a convergence of people to come together, activists, community leaders, organizers, people who are passionate about creating a more just society. And the slogan is "Another World is Possible. Another System is Necessary." And this comes from the World Social Forum process.
So this was the third U.S. Social Forum, and as Mike mentioned, we are connected with the World Social Forum, accountable to the World Social Forum. And the belief is that there is a convergence driven by the understanding that people's movements is what will create good social change. So we should just bring on our amazing guests. We have Rose Brewer, who is the U.S. Social Forum National Planning Committee, and Rob Robinson, also on the National Planning Committee. And Rose is with the Gender Justice Work Group, is a professor of African American and Women's Studies at the University of Minnesota. And Rob is a co-founder of Take Back the Land Movement and a staff volunteer at the National Economic Social Rights Initiative in New York City. Welcome, Rob and Rose. Are you there? Uh-oh. Technical difficulties. They'll be coming on. So as Mike mentioned, we were in two of the four different locations. I was in Philadelphia, and it was a very exciting gathering of over 1,500 activists. The first U.S. Social Forum took place in 2007 in Atlanta, Georgia, and was a single gathering of about 10 to 15,000 folks, with a focus again on people's movements. And we'll be talking more about what is a people's movement and why is that, why we focus on that for social change. And then in 2010 in Detroit was another gathering, the second U.S. Social Forum, where 15 to 20,000 folks came together. And we'll talk about a bit about also the World Social Forum, which I believe the first one was in 2009, started in Porto Alegre, Brazil, but happening all over the Global South, usually annually, and bringing together 60, 70, 80,000 folks.
They've been in India, Senegal. Was there one in Kenya?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Venezuela. And this year, no, next year, 2016, will be the first time that the World Social Forum will be in the Global North, and it'll be in Quebec, Canada. So folks were there in Philadelphia from that site, tying in the World Social Forum and U.S. Social Forum. Welcome, Rob and Rose.
Good morning.
Hello.
Glad we have you all. Thank you so much for joining us. So just tell the listeners a little bit about your roles with the Social Forum, or maybe let's just start off talking about the history of the Social Forum.
So I would defer to Rose, since I didn't enter the process until Detroit, so Rose, if you will.
Great, thanks.
Sure. I think you got quite a bit into it, Monica, in tracing its history to the broader World Social Forum process, which actually officially got off the ground in 2001 in Porto Alegre, Brazil, in relationship to your point about the dispossessed activists, people from around the world responding to liberalism, neoliberalism, and organizing from the ground up. And it didn't happen in the U.S. until 2007, in the wake of the unnatural disaster called Katrina. It was around that thematic that the first forum was held, and then there was a second one in Detroit, given the multiple economic issues confronting Detroit, and then our forums this year in San Jose, in Philadelphia, Jackson People's Movement Assembly, and Mexico, Tijuana People's Movement Assembly.
Tell us a little bit about the polycentric. Why is there a focus this time on multiple locations?
You want me to take that, or Rob, do you want it?
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Rosa. I defer to the people with the most knowledge.
Well, I don't know about that, but I have been in the process since, I guess, really some of the World Social Forums participated in those, and was very engaged in the forum in Atlanta and, of course, Detroit. But the idea was that we need to build across this country, and we also need to build regionally. And the idea of multiple sites with people from the region being able to go to those sites to be able to intensely engage in the work of that region, and of course to come together as a convergent movement. There's a third component that we might talk about, a culmination in an assembly of assemblies in 2016, which will actually in fact bring the polycentrism into more holism. But I think for multiple reasons, the challenges of getting to one site, as well as the political strategy of trying to build across the country.
I think this is Rob, if you'll add. I think there's also a practical reason we could throw in there, Rose, right? A lot of us are struggling in our own communities and don't have the mm-hmm. resources to travel far distances. So, you know, on that order, we've come up with technology to connect the sites and, you know, the polycentric sites. And I think that just adds to be able to connect people without a lot of resource. I think that's a huge key, because we've been dependent on resources to bring us together in the past. And we're finding out, like they do across borders, that you can come together around these issues. While resources are important, it doesn't necessarily have to drive your coming together.
Can I ask a question of both of you? You were both in Philadelphia, as well as Monica. And a lot of the questions that I get from people after attending one of these forums is, how many people were there? What was the turnout?
Well, we have forums. Yeah. Anyway, go right ahead.
Yeah, we have numbers, you know, different estimates. I don't think we finished crunching the final numbers, but I think we had as many as 1,500 registered. I don't know what the actual walk-in numbers yet. We have yet to sit down and have those discussions, but that information will be released in the near future.
Okay.
But could I say just a bit more about the numbers question?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Please do.
You know, I think another component of this, and Rob played a central role, is while some people may not have been able to be on the sites, there were efforts to stream some of the programming. We're doing documentation that reaches out broadly to get a sense of how this particular formation worked for folk. And I do think we can't emphasize enough that the resources to put on a forum are large, and they have diminished quite dramatically in this period from the so-called great economic collapse. We've been in crisis for a long time to the current moment. So it's multi-layered, I think, in terms of the numbers issue, and whether or not that's the most important political question, I think that's something that we're going to have to really reflect on.
Absolutely.
So each of you was provided leadership for one of the main building blocks of the Social Forum is what's called the People's Movement Assembly. And Rose, I know you were involved in the Gender Justice People's Movement Assembly, or PMA. And Rob, you were involved in the housing. And I wonder if you would just talk a little bit about your experience. Maybe Rose, start with talking about gender justice. And I'd love to hear how the housing PMA went as well.
I thought the Gender Justice PMA was quite successful. It has a backstory. We've always been very very concerned about how the Social Forum and how our movements deal with issues of genders, and all the complexity. And we had, I think, a very very committed group of organizers from Philadelphia who were absolutely committed to developing that PMA and really stayed the course. And I attended it, and I thought it was really quite locally developed, although we at the national level had monthly calls with the sites on the call, and the organizers from Philly were always on the call, keeping us abreast. And of course, we were talking back and forth around the broader needs of the forum, as well as the specific needs of the Philadelphia locale. They had a wonderful turnout of folk, and have plans to move the process forward with a series of action steps. And I just thought it was an excellent model that we need to really lift up and share with others about how that work unfolded. So
those Philadelphia organizers were amazing. Right. And amazing. So we're talking to Rose Brewer in Minneapolis and Rob Robinson in New York City about the U.S. Social Forum 3 that just took place in multiple locations last weekend. Rob, tell us a little bit about the Housing People's Movement Assembly. And one of the things about People's Movement Assemblies that folks should know is that you have to leave with strategy, that it's a discussion, everyone is involved, and then and it's a building block toward a different way of doing things.
So that I think that point is key there, Monica. One of the things we all agreed to was, you know, we found it difficult in organizing. We did a lot of the organizing for the People's Movement Assembly by telephone. But when we explained that process, the people in the room wanted to engage in that process moving forward. So generally in organizing, we get people pushing away from conference calls. The folks in the Housing PMA embraced getting on the phone and really drilling down deeper and figuring out a strategy. So that was the walk away. But I think organizing, what was special for me is in housing movements in this country, we have worked in silos, right? We all, you know, have probably the same goal in mind, but we take different routes to get there. So organizing this was some big folks from different movements that haven't, and I'll be very transparent about this, haven't always played well in the sandbox together. So Take Back the Land was in the room. I represented Take Back the Land, the Right to the City Alliance, National Alliance of HUD Tenants, were some of the key organizers involved in bringing this People's Movement Assembly together, which I think raised the interest, right? These different movements which represented renters, which represented homeowners, which represented people who were struggling for the right and access to land, all came together to bring this thing and make it happen. So I think that was key for me, just, you know, something to walk away with a big smile on my face saying, okay, folks for the good of the community and a vision of a better world decide to put their differences aside and really make this thing worthwhile and come out of there with some concrete next steps. So it was just great to see, you know, 100 people in the room talking about struggling, figuring out how we can move forward together.
Great. I'm glad it was a success. I was involved in a social workers PMA, so social workers who were getting together to look at the harm that can be done by the social work model and creating a different model. So we really actually got some great strategy out of that too with some great folks. So the Social Forum is not a conference. We call it a movement building convergence. Do you think that we accomplished that?
I do. I think, you know, we were on a step at, you know, it wasn't the same scale that we've seen in prior social forum gatherings. But I don't think it needs to be those numbers. As Rose laid out, there are a lot of layers involved in the work, and we were able to connect folks through technology. So mm-hmm. it remains to be seen in the aftermath of the social forum and us moving forward to the assemblies of assemblies how successful we were. But, you know, I'm very confident that we were successful. Messages were distributed. I think it was huge that we connected Mexico mm-hmm. to North America in a real way, right? People got to sit down, talk, and hear from one another. And the important work that's going on in Jackson was connected to this thing in a real way. You know, while it was a People's Movement assembly, there was interactions with all of the sites, and I think that's huge. What is happening in Jackson, I think, is a model that we need to replicate around the country, so it was great to have them take part in this whole process also.
Rose, can I ask, you're in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Are you still with us, Rose?
We might have lost Rose.
Okay. So, yeah, I was just thinking, Rob, I'll ask you, I was curious about some of the specific things that you might be able to take back to your local community after attending the U.S. Social Forum and how that will benefit the work that you do on the ground there.
So it's hard for me to answer that question, Mike, because I work in so many communities around the country and around the world. I every time I'm involved in these types of events, there's something different. So I think the collaborative effort is huge. You know, I'm very clear in speaking out that we tend to work in silos in this country, mm-hmm. and I think the social forum goes a long way towards bringing us together and learning from one another. Right? Tactics and strategies used in one place can work in other places too, and we have to create models of sharing. That hasn't always been the way that the social justice movement has worked in this country. And I think the social forum pushes us in that direction to share and learn from one another. But I think also the fact that Mexico plugged in, there's a lot for us to learn outside of the borders of the U.S., right? Mm-hmm. Political okay. struggle, mm-hmm. political education are so important to movements outside of the U.S., and we can learn from those models.
Thank you so much, Rob, for being on, and Rose as well. Even though she's not with us anymore, I think she had to go on to the... she had something else this morning, but we really appreciate all your work and for joining us here at KBOO. And
thanks for having me.
We will talk again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
You too. So moving on next, we're going to also check in with participants who played an important role in the U.S. Social Forum in San Jose this past week. We're going to talk to Edgar Franks. He's a coordinator of a civic engagement project titled Community to Community, and they do a lot of work, important work on immigrants' rights, food justice, and farm workers' rights in rural Washington. And we're also going to check in with Shemako Noble, part of the national coordinator. He's a national coordinator of the U.S. Social Forum, and he's also a hip-hop artist and cultural organizer and political theorist from San Jose, California. So we'll get those guys on the phone. And again, if you want to call in, you can call us at
503-231-8187. If you have a question about the World Social or the U.S. Social Forum or the World Social Forum, give us a call, 503-231-8187.
Would you... Okay. Well, before we go to Edgar, we've got a caller, George, on the line. So let's take a call from George.
Okay. I'll try to put this a little bit of past, way far back. The U.S. contributed to jobs flowing out into the Caribbean. This caused problems all over the eastern U.S. Textile workers lost their jobs in many cities. And we contributed also to destroying the lives of people in Guatemala and El Salvador 30 years ago. And now often the mothers and children come here. And the benefits to the Caribbean from the Great Job Export Program were not all that great. We have people desperate in Puerto Rico now. The U.S. is a very interactive economy, and we have people out of work. And we have areas in our country that are looking like third world countries, and we have the police behaving with well, like severe repression, as you know, all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And all these things need support from these social forums, I think. One of the key things we need to do is, if we're going to bring people here, we need jobs for them, and we need them to stop being murdered by the police.
Mm-hmm.
We need to support the people in Detroit who have their water disconnected, and many of them have lost their jobs as the auto industry went to Asia or other places. And we don't want to be harsh against other countries, but we need to find some way to support the victims here, who often are people who came here from other parts of the world after we invaded their economies, like Mexico. What are we doing about all this?
Well, I agree with your point of view, and I think that one of the things that's important for us to be able to do is understand the interconnectedness of our struggles here and the struggles of people in other places. You know, you talked about Guatemala, you talked about the Caribbean. A lot of these places that U.S. industry shipped jobs to, they did so because they wanted to further exploit workers and create more profit at the expense of the masses there.
Sure.
And like you said, that led to people having to migrate from those places looking for a better economy, you know, to live in. And I think that if you look at some of these, the common interests that exploit people globally, they organize. You have the G20, the G8, the G7, and they're always coming together in these global summits where they plan their activities. And I think it's important for us on the ground in our local communities, our national communities, as well as globally, to have to think, to be able to think globally as well, to be able to think outside of our local communities.
We build strategy.
Exactly, as we do things here in our local communities. And I think that the U.S. Social Forum and the World Social Forum processes are important.
So are we supporting, for example, people who come to the great Central Valley of California, and some of their parents came there 20, 30 years ago, and now the water there is so polluted, it's very dangerous, and often pesticide drifts across the land,
right,
and people are getting cancer.
Right, right.
What are we doing to support these people who came here for better lives, and how can we get Congress to talk about jobs? It's great to support gay marriage and the rights of GLBTQ people. This is important.
So, George, we're going to thank you for your thanks for your message, and we are going to bring on our guests now. And I think one of the important things about what George is saying and how it ties into the U.S. Social Forum is almost all of those issues that George brought up were issues that people were strategizing around, talking about, coming together, is happening all across, not just the United States, but across the world. People don't have water. People are having their children taken for not having water. Lots of different things that are happening all over where people are strategizing and talking. But we should get to our next folks.
So, Edgar, you do a lot of work around immigrants' rights, okay? So you work with the population that has come because things have been disemboweled, gutted in their own countries. So can you talk some about the work that you're doing with community to community?
Right. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, Edgar.
Hi, Monica. How are you doing?
Good.
Good to hear your voice.
You too.
In community to community, we're an organization based out of Bellingham, Washington. You know, we've been involved, a lot of me personally, been involved with the social forum process here in the U.S. since 2012, November 2012, right after the re-election of Barack Obama. And our organization focuses on, you know, farm workers, the food system, immigrants, how do we transform the food system to something more just, you know, but it's something that has to go deeper than just buying organic or from your local farmer. You know, you have to talk about also, you know, at labor, you were just talking about the exploitation of labor. And within the food system, farm workers are on the bottom rung when it comes to justice. Lots of that has to do with the historical context with farm labor within the United States. You know, like the first folks that were brought in to work the fields were African people that were enslaved to work the fields here in the United States. And, you know, there's always been a continuation of that with we haven't seen justice for people that work the land. Most often it's people that have been displaced from third world countries. My family, you know, they're from Mexico. They also, I mean, were displaced from their traditional homelands in northern Mexico. We're following, you know, where the money or the where we think the jobs are here. We ended up here in Skagit County and Washington. So this is where we're at right now. But, you know, it's just because we're here living in the United States does not mean that we have economic security or we're being prosperous because we're now, you know, before we had at least a little bit of land, a little community land that we had there to sustain ourselves. Now we're landless. And landless and impoverished, where the only thing that we have to do left to survive is sell our labor on the open market. Most of the time, you know, the poverty wages, the piece rate system within the United States with farm workers and agricultural industry and many other industries are getting paid for it's not a sustainable way of living. It's really hard to work. And sustain a family of two or three kids, and when you're picking like berries for people at 20 cents a pound, 20, 30 cents a pound, where you're, and you're working under the conditions, you know, in the sun, rain, whatever. So, you know, like we come with that aspect, you know, we're immigrants here living in the United States that have been exploited by economics, by empire. And, you know, it's, we could either do two things. We could just accept it or we could resist. And luckily for me, I mean, my family passed down that history of resistance and being part of the social forum and, you know, bringing that voice and from my community to the social forum process with all the other voices, you know, whether it be with the hip-hop and the resistance to corporate domination of the industry, you know, with the houseless folks, with Black Lives Matter, with people that have been incarcerated unjustly. You know, there's like a lot of other issues that are happening. And for me, it's important to be bringing that aspect of farm workers and transforming the food system from what it is right now, an agricultural corporate model, to something different, something better, something that we call food sovereignty. Where every community can get determined how to feed themselves. So, you know, it's always an honor and a pleasure to be in communication with people that are doing actual work on the grassroots level and, you know, not depending on, you know, they're not doing research projects or, you know, getting funded by corporate foundations. This is actual work being done at local communities. So, you know, this is the kind of people we want to work with.
That's awesome, man. I'm glad that you are down there, and I'm glad for the work that you're doing up there in Washington. Mm-hmm. You know, the term People's Movement Assembly, it sounds a little self-explanatory. You're taking people's movements, you're bringing people together, and you're assembling, and you're trying to figure out how to move the work forward. And I wanted to ask you, Shimako, if you could talk a little bit more about the concept of the PMA, not the positive mental attitude, but the People's Movement Assembly, and what that means to the U.S. Social Forum.
Well, good morning.
Good morning,
good morning.
Monica. That completely sounds like a morning show, by the way.
the good kind.
yeah, I mean, you definitely benefit from a positive mental attitude inside of the People's Movement Assembly. You know, they originally come out of a series of processes that sort of kicked off in the South, Project South, to be specific. You know, folks like Walter Katz Fishman, Jerome Scott, Stephanie, and Emery over at Project South currently. Also, I want to give a shout-out to Landria Williams of the Highlander Center, who also played a really important role. And like you said, it's pretty self-explanatory, bringing people together, assembling everyday people to make movement impact. And I think that it's really important to remember, I think, two things that aren't as obvious. One is that they are explicitly political gatherings. They're not just conversations to make us feel better about ourselves or bad about ourselves. They're designed to generate strategy. I also think it's important to note that they were created as a decolonization process.
Okay.
As a means by which people could sort of feel their own power, their own community's power, their own movement's power without needing anyone's permission.
Decolonization.
Which I think community did extremely well over the course of the last week, as did many other organizations throughout the country.
Thank you for that explanation. Edgar, you guys, community to community, had an impressive amount of folks down there. How many people did you bring?
It was roughly around 20 folks.
Wow.
Wow.
Right.
Great.
So were you all very energized, mobilized, inspired by what happened? And how is that going to, what is that going to look like in your local community?
Yeah, I mean, it was people that never had participated in the social forum process. Me personally, I'd never been to a U.S. social forum, so it was good to see it in action, you know, helping out Shamako. I got to do the little background stuff, and he explained to me, you know, what it takes to kick off a social forum.
Yeah.
The folks here, you know, before when we talk about a social forum here in Bellingham, people would be like, what are you talking about? Like, it's not a conference, so, like, what is it? So, you know, I mean, it's hard to explain to people until they're actually there. So, you know, we brought a good mix of people, like white folks doing anti-racist work and solidarity work with people of color. We got young farm workers that were there. So it was a good mix of our community there. And, you know, now instead of just me and a couple of, like, people from C2C that are doing social forum process activities and PMAs, now we have a group of 20 people that are familiar. So, you know, hopefully we can start replicating and start practicing some of the things that came out of the social forum and grow the movement locally, which I think is one of the key components of the social forum, where you just don't go to a conference and people throw information at you. You actually have to use that information to just start transforming your communities.
And how do you prepare folks? What are some of the things you did in advance?
Right now, you know, actually, there's a strike going on with farm workers that just happened this morning. So we're doing a couple of things at the same time. But, you know, to prepare the people to go to San Jose, to the lead up, you know, last year in 2014, we had a People's Movement Assembly in Bellingham, Washington, inviting people from all over the Northwest to come participate. So through that course, we had at least four different PMAs happen. We attended the Pacific Northwest Social Forum in Portland. We've been trying to, yeah, as best as we can, pass down the process to the people doing the work and the principles of participatory democracy and you know, like trying to like give little bits and pieces, but again, you know, it's not the same until you actually see it in person. And for us, that was one of our main goals, to make sure that we had a good group that would head down to San Jose and engage fully so they can witness it themselves. And I think for the first couple of days, everybody was thrown off because nobody had ever seen anything like that. You know, there was like 100 workshops going on at the same time and people moving assemblies. People are like, what's going on? Like, nobody's telling me where to go, and I have to walk, like, a couple blocks. Like, what's going on?
Like, preparation is key.
Right, yeah, and I think that was part of the whole experience, and hearing the feedback from the people, they were really appreciative of the whole, how it was set up. So they weren't just confined to a space. They actually got to walk around San Jose.
Awesome.
And I just want to make sure we talk about, Shamako, you're our national coordinator, so we all owe you so much gratitude, although, of course, there's a group that really helps. But tell us about the role of hip-hop and culture in the social forum in general and how that looked in San Jose. Do we lose Shamako? Mike?
Did you catch that question that Monica asked you, Marco?
Mute issues. Yes, absolutely. You know, well, first, you know, I think everyone who participated is definitely owed a thanks, and that goes all the way back to the World Social Forum, of course.
Uh-oh. I think you might have gone on mute.
Did your cheekbone press the mute button, Shamarco?
If people don't know him, he gestures. And
So hopefully we'll get...
Okay.
Well, we just lost them both. Hopefully we'll get them back. So he was talking about how this process goes back to the World Social Forum. And I think he was probably going to talk a little bit about how culture is a front of struggle. And in that regard, hip hop being responsible for a lot of the consciousness that goes with the culture that is created by the people that come from the most marginalized communities really around the globe, and how hip hop has been an important tool for speaking and expressing the consciousness through the music, through the dance, you know, through the visual aspect. And it's really been a way for people to decolonize as well, as people globally appropriate hip hop culture that was created by primarily African and Afro-Latino youth in the United States. And you can see this cultural expression everywhere on earth now. And I think that it's important to note, you know, Shamarco playing a role in Hip Hop Congress has done a lot of work to bring organizers, leaders, and artists together from the hip hop movement nationally and play a part in this process through people's movement assemblies, and also not just through, you know, strategically organizing and planning, but also through expressing themselves and rocking shows, you know, and getting together and making music and people actually coming together socially to have a good time around hip hop music. And I'll say that in San Jose, there were two amazing hip hop shows, you know, that were part of the social forum process. So it is a social forum, and there are people's movement assemblies, and there are workshops, and there's also time for people to gather and enjoy, you know, sharing each other's work in a way that can be fun and exciting. And we've got Shamarco back. So if you want to speak more to that question of the role that hip hop has played and does play.
Well, you know, I'll just say that, you know, we did a panel discussion sort of as part of the conclusion to the What the Bleep Happened in Hip Hop series. Mike, of course, was a part of that. And I think that we had a young man from Southern California Hip Hop Congress chapter out there who said it really well. And he was really just stating that when we talk about capitalism or what capitalism is, the challenges that our system presents, what we're really talking about is culture. What we're talking about is how we choose to not just economically organize ourselves, but define how our society will interact. I think that beyond just being entertaining or inspiring, you know, we had some panelists who, you know, like, it's how you think, talk, walk, dress, behave, calculate math. And so inevitably it's going to play a huge role in the forum. And, of course, it's been a very long historical struggle. This forum was the first forum where we managed to successfully get placed within fronts of struggle. There were multiple cultural organizations present as contributing parties and leadership, and not just, you know, side entertainment, but, you know, they did that too. We did that too. And, you know, I'll just close by saying that, you know, mentioned I'm national coordinator. We also had Detroit's local coordinator, Will Copeland. And there's been a stream of artist-based leadership throughout the forums. There was a meme floating around from Carlton Turner of Alternate Roots. That basically stated that that's because of the interest in deep and long-lasting change. So okay. I'll stop there.
Thank you so much, Edgar and Shamarco. It's been great talking to you guys. And
Edgar, maybe just tell us a little bit more about how people can hear about, you just told us that there's something else big happening today.
Right. Well, there's a strike over here with farm workers that we've been heavily supporting. They formed a union 2 years ago. Their name is Familias Unidas por la Justicia. if you want to follow what they're doing, I'm pretty sure they're updating their Facebook right now with all the strike stuff. So if you go to Facebook, Familias Unidas por la Justicia, or to their website, boycottsakumaberries.com, you can find out more information. And if you eat berries, don't buy Driscoll, because they're boycotting, because these workers are picking for them and they're getting exploited and they're fighting for justice. So.
And the community website is foodjustice.org?
Foodjustice.org.
Okay.
Where we also have information.
Well, thank you both of you, Edgar Frank, Shimako Noble. Thanks for your work. And we'll see you soon.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
All right, y'all.
All right.
You want to introduce Sherry? Hey, Sherry.
Hey, Sherry. What's going on?
Hi. How are you guys?
Good. We got Sherry Honkala. Probably most folks know her. She's an American anti-poverty advocate, co-founder of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, and co-founder and national coordinator of the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, which was one of a few, but the main local organizing anchor groups in Philadelphia. And you guys just did a great job with very little resources, amazing people. Thank you for all you did. And we had a really great time.
That's great.
tell us more about the U.S. Social Forum in Philly.
Well, for us, it was really exciting and historical because it was actually the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign that many years ago lobbied the World Social Forum to have a social forum in the U.S. So we took our rent money and we flew international and we participated in the international council meetings, and we were excited when it came to our country. We've been, all the way until this morning, continuing to take people to trains and buses and stuff. But it was very exciting because we were able to take folks on a reality tour here, take them to our over 30 housing takeovers that are currently in effect. As we were organizing this, we were also excited because we have the largest disability organization in the country, Disabled in Action, and they played a very important organizing role in this process. And we're also excited because there was a lot of groups that see themselves as independent of the two-party system that participated. We were excited that the Social Work Action Alliance decided to come strong to Philly, and I think had a really exciting People's Movement Assembly. We've been hearing about that. And we also had Immortal Technique and Rebel Diaz and, like, you know, 15 different performers, including the art exhibit of Indigenous Resistance.
Nice.
So we're really excited. we're leaving this process with, we already held a meeting this morning. There's going to be a big fundraiser in Philadelphia and a report back process. And we're getting ready because we're going to participate in the Global Climate Convergence's Global Climate Strike on that begins on Thanksgiving. We're turning that into a day to have mindful meals. And that week, we will participate in sit-ins and shutdowns and link the struggle here in the U.S. to the proceedings that are going to be taking place in Paris. And then we're setting up organizing circles across the entire country of poor and homeless people in organizing for the March for Our Lives on opening day of both the Republican National Convention in Ohio and opening day of the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia.
In July,
so we're
right?
We're going to link those two marches. Yep.
Wow.
Next
so
July.
That's a
yeah.
lot.
No day off for P-Perk. Wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and thank you for reminding us the importance of doing a meeting here to debrief and what's our next steps for our region here. So important, and you guys are already doing it. So one of the things that one of the things that I remember from going to the World Social Forum is that part of our role was folks don't think that there's poverty in the United States, which always kind of blows my mind. But it's true. They think that it's not. And so it's important for us to talk about the conditions here. And while, you know, we are in the belly of the beast, so to speak, because a lot of our U.S. policies and domination and using violence across the world is creating, you know, devastation for the people and the planet. People actually don't know about how much incredible poverty that there is and how much people are suffering here under this system that we have. And so one of the things I really love also about the Social Forum is the focus on people's movements and also de-emphasizing the role of NGOs. And that's something that you talk a lot about, Sherry, is the nonprofit industrial complex. And Mike has been asking our guests about the impacts on our communities and what we are leaving with that. But I think one of the models that's really helpful to all of us about the Social Forum is to listen to the people and see what folks are doing on the ground and to de-emphasize the role. I mean, of course, there's an important role for NGOs, but to the primacy of people's movements, I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about that and the importance of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're at a historical juncture in our country, and either we link up with the rest of the world that's serious about saving the people and the planet, or, you know, we're really in danger. I mean, they're talking about the elimination of entire species, and certainly those of us that do organizing in frontline communities are so very tired of visiting our loved ones in prison, or worse, burying them. Mm. And I think that one of the main things that we need to do is we need to get together, strategize, figure out the same way they did during the days of the Black Panthers, how to identify independent funding streams, and how to get serious about, you know, watching where people's money comes from, and then making sure that we align ourselves with people that are independent in this process and aren't really being controlled by the Chamber of Commerce or multinational corporations and foundations. Mm-hmm. And I know that's so hard for many of our, you know, brothers and sisters that are out there that depend on the foundation world. But it's really important. You know, the other side is not going to fund the revolution. Mm-hmm. And at some point, we really have to question what it is that we're doing if we continue to not meet the needs of the people by, you know, going and just making sure that we have our 2.3 staff people in our little nonprofit. And so this is a very difficult thing. I mean, people saw what happened at the Social Forum. We had a 14-year-old kid that has cancer and is taking doing chemotherapy and was referred to us by, you know, Catholic Charities. And we're receiving referrals from Catholic Charities, from the Salvation Army, from the Red Cross. All of these, you know, multi-million dollar budget organizations. And, you know, the Poor People's Economic Rights Campaign has a less than $2,000 a month budget. And something's really wrong with that. And so,
and they're referring people to you for help.
Yeah, and they're referring people to us.
Right.
And so something really has to change. You know, especially, you know, both in Ohio and in Philly, as they really quadruple the militarization of the police in preparation for the Pope arriving here and trying to hide and further criminalize the homeless here, as well as, you know, further create the charade that it's a beautiful city in preparation for the Democratic National Convention, they're going to come down hard on us. So we need the rest of the country and the rest of the world to see what's happening and to speak truth to what's happening. That's the only way we can begin to change these things.
Did you... I want to think about next steps for a minute, and I'd like it if you could talk about that, Sherry. We've got 2016. You just talked about, you know, preparing the city and possible repression that's going to be coming down on people. What are some of the next steps coming out of this process for the next year, for 2016?
Well, I think that this next round is going to be really difficult. And so I think that we're going to need as many human rights observers and witnesses as possible. And we need as many organizing circles across the entire country of frontline communities willing to come together and join us when we march from Ohio to Philadelphia, from the Republican National Convention to the Democratic National Convention, because we see what's happening with the militarization of the police. We know what's happening, you know, just with the overall killing of people and the emergence of Black Lives Matter out of necessity. And we really need people to join us in these efforts to break the media blackout, to talk about the horrible things that are happening in this country, no matter how much mainstream media and the powers that be will go to whatever lengths that they go to try and silence the truth about what's really taking place in this country, because we don't have a choice. I mean, during these conventions, that's when our country has the world stage, and we need to use that world stage in a very responsible way, and that's to talk about the absolute inhumane conditions that people are living in this country.
Well, thank you for doing the work that you're doing, and yeah, stay safe out there, continue to do the good work, and thanks for being on the radio.
Sounds great. I hope people get involved. Go to economichumanrights.org.
Absolutely. Thanks for all your work.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. So we've got a few minutes left. It's been an interesting morning talking about the U.S. Social Forum, and I wanted to take a little time and talk about something that's going on here locally. There's a lot of conversation happening in communities everywhere about cultural appropriation in the context of people being displaced from their own communities, in the context of gentrification. And there's events in the media all the time. You know, the recent big distraction was around this woman who identified as Black, but she was actually white and was a leader in the NAACP and so on and so forth. And something that's been happening locally is there's been a local artist who's part of the Just Seeds Collective, which is a national artist collective by the name of Roger Pete. And he's doing something called Inappropriate, and it's an excavation of appropriation, visuals, voicemails, digging into what the artists in public think about cultural appropriation. And there's a show that opens July 8th at 5 p.m. in the Littman Gallery at Portland State University. And it's interesting. One of the things he wanted to do was get the voices and opinions of people. And so he posted a phone number and had people call that number and leave their opinion on cultural appropriation. I thought it was a great approach. And when this exhibit happens, he's going to share some of those voicemails that people left about cultural appropriation. And Steve, why don't we share a little bit of that, so I'm not just talking about the project, and kind of get a feeling for how that's going. Let's play the prison one. Okay, so...
Hey there, my name is Matt. I am 33 years old, and I saw your poster, and I thought that I would speak about 7 months ago. I got out of prison. I was in for 3 years and 10 months, and I think there's really not much of a better example of cultural appropriation as kind of this microcosmic society that prison kind of is. You have elements of Native American culture, of African American culture, that just completely get absorbed by the entire population as kind of a means of survival. It's really quite interesting. You have a fairly large Hispanic culture, and they control a lot of the gang population. So a lot of people adapt those particular mannerisms and cultures to survive as functioning members of the sects that control so much of the political background.
So that was a very interesting opinion coming from somebody who had recently got out of prison. And so it's, you know, these opinions aren't right or wrong, but they're voices of the public. And it's interesting to have them weigh in on the process of cultural appropriation and see what people's different thoughts are on it. It's something that's happening in our community. So I want to remind folks again that is going to be that show is going to be happening July 8th, 5 p.m. at the Littman Gallery at Portland State University. And I also want to let people know that Monica and I are going to be back on the radio today at 5:45 p.m. for news from the Boo. And we're going to be talking about the mission and vision statements that we created.
Yeah, and if folks want to read the draft, they can go to kboo.fm and then give us a call about we're taking input on our draft mission and vision statements.
Proud co-sponsor of the Portland Underground Grad School Series, Portland's Urban Native Americans, What You Need to Know to Be an Ally. Classes will start July 8th and continuing for 4 weeks on Wednesdays at 7 at Southeast Uplift in Portland. Classes will focus on issues such as federal policy toward Native peoples, inequities Portland's Native peoples face, blood quantum, and more. It will also address contemporary ideas of privilege, white fragility, and the complexities of intersectionality. Again, that's Portland's Urban Native Americans, What You Need to Know to Be an Ally, Wednesdays at 7 p.m. at Southeast Uplift, 3534 Southeast Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.